Hi, and welcome to the Salvation Army Southwest podcast. You'll find engaging messages here, so please go ahead and listen and check out some of our other messages and enjoy what you hear. You can always follow us online on our Facebook page or go to our website to find out more information. Thank you for listening.
What a great clip. Now, before we start, I'm going to give you a chance to get out your Bible if you've got one. If you've heard me preach before, I do tend to flick around to a few different passages, and only one of them is on the screen. We're mostly in the Gospels today, so they shouldn't be too hard to find. Have you brought your life jacket today? Because we are going boating. Have you ever been out in a boat in rough seas? Now, I know I might look like it, but I'm not a very experienced boatwoman. I prefer to have my feet on solid ground. In fact, I joke that if the boat isn't big enough to have a proper toilet, I'm not getting on it. I'm a bit of a boat snob, and if it doesn't meet my standards, I'd rather stay on land. Lucky though, the ferry across to Rottnest is a pretty decent-sized boat, because I was recently asked to go and stay over there with my husband and some of his extended family. And we had a lovely holiday. But it started a bit rough. The day we travelled across was not a good day for it. The waves were the biggest that I've travelled on so far. They were crashing against the boat and we were getting tossed from side to side and up and down. Now, an experienced sailor might have thought, I've seen bigger. But for me, they were huge. My previous nautical experience had not prepared me for just how bad proper sickness feels. The crew had warned us that it was rough, and they'd freely offered sick bags. I think they'd gone around about three times before we'd even started. So we knew it wasn't going to be a great ride. But we trusted the boat and that they'd planned a safe route, and we did make it there safely. We just ended up a little worse for wear. But if I thought that my boat ride was bad, I can't even imagine how bad it would have been if you'd been on the Sea of Galilee at night and in a storm. We hear about this journey in three of the Gospels. So we're going to hear it from Mark's account today. So if you'd like to turn to Mark 4, 35 to 41. Do you ever find that the preachers never give you enough time to actually find it in your Bible? No, it's not just me. If it's one of the easy ones, you usually get to it reasonably quickly. But if it's one of the smaller ones, I'm always still looking, and then they go, "Are you ready?" And you're like, "No, I'm not ready. I'm not ready yet." But anyway, Mark 4, 35 to 41. That evening, Jesus said to his followers, "Let's go across the lake." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him in the boat just as he was. There were also other boats with them. A very strong wind came up on the lake. The waves came over the sides and into the boat so that it was already full of water. Jesus was at the back of the boat, sleeping, with his head on a cushion. His followers woke him and said, "Teacher, don't you care that we are drowning?" Jesus stood up and commanded the wind and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind stopped and it became completely calm. Jesus said to his followers, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" The followers were very afraid and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and waves obey him." Can you imagine being in that situation? You're on a smallish boat, getting swamped by waves. Surely you would be terrified too. Can you imagine falling asleep on that boat? Verse 37 says, "The waves came over the sides and into the boat so that it was already full of water." Whenever I pictured that boat, I always add like an under kind of area, an actual room where Jesus was sleeping. But if they were using Peter's fishing boat, it would have just been an open boat. So I don't know how could Jesus have stayed asleep if the water was in the boat. He would have been getting wet. So So I don't know how long it took for the disciples to decide it was time for Jesus to be woken up. It must have either been very quick, Jesus was a very heavy sleeper, or he was waiting to be asked. Can you remember the last big storm you were in? I presume you would have been inside at the time. Have you ever sat at a window and looked outside at this storm? The rain is going sideways, beating across the window. The wind is blowing, perhaps there's a crack of lightning. And then the window rattles with the rumble of the thunder. Can you imagine if Jesus was standing there beside you? And all of a sudden, he says, quiet. And it calms. The clouds clear. And maybe a rainbow appears. I think that would fill you with awe and fear. The storm may be strong, but Jesus is stronger. Calming the storm clearly displays how powerful Jesus is. He might have looked just like a man in that boat, but he shows he has access to limitless power. How human do you think the response was of Jesus to the disciples in this situation? I know for myself, if I get woken up, I am grumpy. Now, obviously, I'm not Jesus, but Jesus was fully human and fully God. So as human, he had had a long day. He was so tired that he'd fallen asleep in a boat. And he'd stayed asleep when it was getting rough. If you turn to John 2:1-11, do we see a little bit more of the human attitude coming out? It almost reads like a teenage boy attitude. And I'm sure that comes from Jesus' human side. In John 2:1-11, he's at a wedding. He's having a party. He's been invited to this wedding. And he's a young man at this stage. Was he dancing? Was he just relaxing and eating and having a good time? Since he'd been invited, I'm sure he was enjoying the party. It wasn't a work do for him. He'd just been invited as a guest. When you think of the character of Jesus, do you imagine him dancing? Or in your mind, is he always like the serious Jesus, you know, with the robes and the very serious? I thought it was quite nice to imagine that he would have enjoyed dancing. In John 2:4, he says, "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied, "My hour has not yet come." Some of the versions, I think, seem to imply a little bit of sass. You know, like when you ask a teen to do something and they're like, "Why do I have to do that?" Do you think it came out something like, "Mom, why do I have to fix this problem? I'm just here to have a good time." Have you ever got exasperated at someone you loved because they asked you to do something in the middle of when you were doing something important? I'm very guilty of that. I wonder if that was the same attitude that Jesus had when he got woken up on that boat. He got woken up out of his sleep and he was like, "Oh, quiet. It's fixed now. Can I go back to sleep?" If that was me, that's how I would have done it. But perhaps from Jesus' point of view, it was more like if your child is waking you up because they're scared. And perhaps that's how he responded. For me, I always used to take the line to be said in kind of a telling off way. Like he was telling the disciples off. How have you always thought the line was spoken? Verse 40 says, Jesus said to his followers, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" Do you imagine he said that in anger? Or was he gentle about it? Was he exasperated? How do you think he said quiet? Do you think he yelled it? Or do you think he just said it normally or whispered it? There is a popular book series where a few choice scenes are widely criticized because of how different the book is to the way the movie portrays it. In particular, there's this one line that says, the character said calmly. But in the book, the character flies off the handle, yells, runs across the room and yells at the character. There's a very, very different to how the book goes, to how it was imagined. Do you read the Bible at face value? Or do you try to add a little bit to it, to go a little bit deeper, kind of flesh out the scenes? I've previously always read this story and just taken it at face value. I pictured Jesus as more like Storm from X-Men. If you've seen one of the movies, she brute forces the storm, crackling with power. So that's how I kind of imagine Jesus in this scene. Like, I can see the power behind him, brute forcing the storm into submission. But you know, Jesus is so much more powerful than that. And he could have just whispered. Even a simple shh would have rendered the storm silent. Which makes me wonder, did he calm the storm because they were actually in danger? Or more because it was freaking the disciples out? He was still asleep at the start of this. He knew they were going to get to their destination regardless. He knew it wasn't his time yet. He still had more to do. So I wonder whether he was trying to show the disciples a different side of himself. The miracles he'd done so far hadn't quite sunken into the disciples yet. So perhaps he was saying it more like you would talk to an upset young child. Why are you afraid? I was here the whole time. You only had to ask and I would have fixed it. How long do you think the disciples were trying to bail out water, straining against the sea with the rudder and trying to control the situation themselves? Do you think they had a discussion whether they should wake Jesus? If you've got kids that are struggling with something, do you just let them flounder? No, you kind of find the balance between letting them give it a go and then stepping in to help. And I think the same is true in this situation. Jesus positions himself close enough to be there should they need him, but he also gives them the freedom to make that choice. He doesn't just calm the storm as soon as it comes up. And he didn't calm the storm before they got to it. Now, I don't know if you've ever noticed, but I have very little hands, but I am very stubborn. I always try to open jars by myself. I'll be struggling for a few minutes, trying to open the jar, and it goes like this. It's a whole body kind of experience. So I'll try this for a few minutes. And then I remember one time I went to Christie's Tupperware party and I got this gift and it's like this magic jar opener. It sits in my drawer. I know where it is. But it takes me minutes of struggling before I go, I'm going to get that out. And then when I use it, the jar goes, pop, 2 seconds. I don't know how it works, but it's kind of magic. So why do I wait until the last minute when I've struggled to get it out? So I wonder if that's what Jesus means by do you still have no faith? He could be saying, you've seen me do miraculous things. People have been healed. Massive crowds are fed. Why didn't you ask for my help sooner? Can you put yourselves in the disciples' shoes there? Have you seen God do miraculous things in your life, but you still try to do it in your own strength? Or go to him as a last resort? I've been going through some stuff lately. You might have noticed I've been away a few weeks these last few months. The last time I led worship, I lost my voice. I went downhill after the service, and by the next day I'd coughed so much, I'd lost my voice. I couldn't talk properly, I couldn't sing, chunks would just be missing. And I felt so distant from God and so low, like I was being punished when I thought I'd been stepping out for God. I've said before that I feel closest to God when I'm singing, more so when it's in private and not on stage. But the words are not just words, they have weight behind them. Have you ever been singing just by yourself and you can't continue because the words connect to something and you end up in tears? And it turns from a song to a prayer. Joel teases me sometimes because there are particular songs that he has in his playlist and I don't like listening to them. I'll almost make him skip them because something about the song causes almost a tangible pain in my heart. I don't know whether it's the lyrics or the notes, but like it's a physical pain. And on the other side, when I'm up here on stage and you can see people in the congregation engaging in worship, it fills my heart with so much joy because I feel like I've aided in helping people connect to God. Music has the power to move you. In the time that my voice was healing, I felt such a hole where that part of my devotional time had been. And I felt so useless not being able to sing. And I felt convicted over that time that I haven't been giving God top priority in my life. You know how life is. You get pulled from one thing to another and you kind of put in a token effort of like reading your Bible and praying. But I noticed when I couldn't sing as part of my devotional time, I grew a greater appreciation of how much my devotional time had been lacking. I realized that I'd been going through the motions in my walk with Jesus. Not intentionally, but little by little, things push you away. And I was feeling drained and empty because I wasn't going to the source for filling. I was trying to do it in my own strength. Jesus isn't going to force you to pay attention. He gives us the free will to make that choice. Do you find that you've let life distract you and pulled you away from your source? And it's got you feeling empty and overwhelmed? Are you like the disciples in a boat, struggling in a storm, and just letting Jesus sleep in the back? You're trying to do it yourself. Like I said before, how long do you think the disciples were trying to control this boat before they woke Jesus? They were young men, and in my experience, young men tend to have a certain cockiness about them. And at least a few of them were experienced fishermen. They had probably handled rough seas before. They probably thought, we got this. We don't need to wake the teacher. He's not even a sailor. But the disciples persevered until they were so afraid they thought they were going to drown. And that is when they went to Jesus. Do you go through life with that same cockiness, thinking, I can do it myself? Is your hope in the boat, the things you can control, or is your hope in the boat, with you in the storm? Have you seen the classic movie Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade? In it, he comes across this huge chasm, too great for him to walk across. He has to take a leap of faith. He puts his foot out into what appears to be nothing, but his foot finds solid ground. Then the camera angle changes, and you can see there was a path the whole time. We just couldn't see it. The next time that Peter is on a stormy sea, his hope is no longer in the boat. Jesus didn't take this journey with them. He'd stayed behind on land to pray. This time, Peter does something crazy. He steps out of the boat and onto the water because Jesus said, come. He's seen enough of Jesus by this point to know his hope is out there walking on the water. And if that's where his hope is, that's where he wants to be. Matthew 14, 25 to 32. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me!" Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You have little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Do you know Jesus' voice well enough that if he said, "Come," you would go? Do you share the same sentiment as the disciples in that last verse and worship, believing that he truly is the Son of God? Have you ever watched The Masked Singer? It's quite a cheesy show where celebrities put on this elaborate costume and then they sing week after week and you've got to try to work out who they are just from their voices. I enjoy watching it, even though it is kind of cheesy. I enjoy the detective work of trying to work out who's who. This past season, I could only watch a couple of episodes here and there, but in the few I did watch, I managed to work out two voices in particular. Their voices were unmistakable. They were Macy Gray and Anastasia. They were quite popular when I was younger, and I even had a CD by Anastasia. It had been given to me as a birthday present when I was in school. But even though I hadn't heard their voices for many, many years, I was still able to recognise them because I'd known them. I'd heard them many times. Can you say the same about Jesus? Have you spent enough time with him to recognise his voice? Can you pick out his voice amongst the din of the world today? Or have you been listening to other things and now you couldn't even say for sure if it's him? John 15, 5-8 says, "I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples." We are called to be connected to the vine. Have you ever seen a grape growing? They grow out these little feelers and then they grab onto whatever they come across. If they grab onto the proper trellis that's been prepared for them, they'll be able to grow strong and up and support the grapes once they grow. But if they don't find anything, they just end up on the floor. Let us commit today to reaching out to Jesus. Let us remain connected to him, spending time listening to him and drawing near. Let us come back to the source and declare, "My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness." If you want to make a declaration that you want to take a step back closer to the source, that Jesus is your foundation, your cornerstone, please stand with us as we sing this next song. If you've never asked Jesus into your heart, please reach out either to Mark or Zoe or to the page if you're online, and they'll be able to help you with some next steps. If you want prayer, there's always a place, or you can speak to someone afterwards or reach out. Let's continue in prayer as we sing this next song, Cornerstone.